Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit Michter's.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
I'm Leyte Sue, host of Word of Mouth. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. We are listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org. It's the greatest radio station in the world. I'm just gonna say that. Because it is. It's truly true. In the studio today, we have the brand new brand ambassador for the Tuttletown Spirits Company and the Hudson Whiskies. Very, very wildly popular whiskey company out of Gardner, New York. We have Han Shun in the studio today. Welcome to the show.
Hey, hey. It's great to be here.
Great to have you.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is it's a new job for you.
This is brand new. Yeah,
brand new.
2 months in now. And I learned something new about every minute.
What? Okay, so that's, to me, like, my favorite part of being in this industry is there's always more to learn, you know? And I'm really glad to have you in the studio. We get to learn from each other today.
Indeed,
you know?
Indeed. Well, thanks so much for having me. And, yeah, I mean, this, it's truly a dream job. Obviously, I've been a fan of Hudson Whiskey for a long time. Mm-hmm. But part of the job is educating people about not just Hudson whiskey, but about whiskey in general. And as somebody who's been drinking whiskey since I was about 3 months old, and I'll tell you that story
yeah,
if you want.
Tell.
You know, I just came back from Nashville, where or Tennessee. We were in Tennessee with a bunch of other whiskey ambassadors from William Grant & Sons, folks who represent the Balvenie, and Glenfiddich, and we were out visiting Corsair, little tiny mm-hmm. micro distillery, not too different from how the early days at Tuttletown, before Hudson Whiskey kind of got a little bit more popular. But we also visited Jack Daniels, which was the other just absolute flip side, but amazing to see. And we saw Dickel, which is kind of in between, certainly a big company owned by Diageo. And mm-hmm. But, you know, we got to see how Tennessee whiskey's made and sample Tennessee whiskey. And, you know, the part of the job is learning about whiskey writ large and being able to spread the love and spread the good word about what makes this spirit something that people all around the world clamor for and love to drink.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I find interesting about the modern state of American whiskeys is that, you know, we love old fashions and Manhattans, and then like this just made me think of this, like when you're at Jack Daniels and Dickel, you know, they're Tennessee whiskey, so they're yeah. they're filtered through sugar maple mm-hmm. Charcoal, and so it makes it a little bit sweeter, but it's mm-hmm. like
some and smoother.
Some people mm-hmm. some people knock on that, but it's like, man, wait a minute, you're drinking an old-fashioned right now, so yeah, you added yeah. sugar to yeah. it. So
it's just, yeah, they're a little bit more like an Irish whiskey, right?
Yeah.
Most Irish whiskey you think of.
A little more body.
Tullamore Dew, Jameson, it's triple distilled. And mm-hmm. when you distill it a third time, you're removing some of the congeners, some of the flavors, you could say, as well. But also, you're making it that much more smooth.
Yeah.
And that works for some people, and it's a lovely thing. I think there's pros and cons, and some people are like, oh, no, that's, ugh. But, you know, I like it all. Now, Hudson whiskey is certainly a little bit more robust, and, you know, it'll stand, our Manhattan rye stands up fantastic in a Manhattan. You wouldn't really want to make a Manhattan probably with Jack Daniels. You could try it. Why not?
Maybe get back on the vermouth.
Indeed. But yeah, it's a very, very exciting time for American whiskey, I think, in general. It's a dream come true to be working in whiskey.
Yeah, absolutely. What got you into whiskey?
Well, so going back to the story about having it, I think my first dram, my first wee dram, I was about 3 months old, and I was with my folks visiting my grandparents, and I had an ear infection which I was troubled by the first in my infancy. And, you know, it's the 70s. So the doctor, I was just inconsolable. I hadn't slept in a day and a half, and I was just crying. And the doctor asked my mom, hey, is there any whiskey in the house? And in my household, yeah, there was a little. I think there was some wild turkey, and he suggested she give me a little wild turkey with my milk, and I put it down and promptly slept for like 24 hours. My mom was looking in on me every once in a while, making sure I wasn't gone. But I was just sleeping a lovely slumber and woke up and asked for a little bit more whiskey. No, I woke up and I wasn't crying anymore, but I had a taste for bourbon.
All you wanted was some whiskey at the end of the day. Nice. So what led you to, how did you become the new brand ambassador for the great Total Town
Sports Company? Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I'm not a brand ambassador for Total Town Distillery or for Total Town Spirits. I only work on Hudson Whiskey, mm-hmm. Which is plenty for me. That being said,
because they have the vodkas and
yep, like they have some other great spirits
and Roggins rum,
fantastic spirits company, fantastic distillery all around. And Gable Irenzo, mm-hmm. who was the brand ambassador,
it's great.
Fantastic dude. He basically wanted to come home and get off the road after being the brand ambassador for Hudson Whiskey for a bunch of years, because he's the son and the father-son duo. His dad Ralph co-founded Tuttle Town Spirits, and you know, Gable himself is a distiller there, and he wanted to take care of Tuttle Town and look after its development and its growth, and be closer to you know, his dog and his dad and his wife Kathy, of course, yeah,
and his motorcycle,
and his Dodge Charger, and
I gotta call him out real quick, Gable. We're still supposed to go on that motorcycle ride soon.
Yeah, there you
go. Maybe before we get into the whiskey.
Yes. You do that on the back end.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he wanted to get off the road, and they basically, Hudson Whiskey did a call out, a search for a new brand ambassador. They created a campaign called Making the Cut, where they were basically saying, hey, if you're a fan, if you dig Hudson Whiskey, you know, step up and maybe you'll make the cut. And you know, I was just telling some other folks that on the morning they announced this campaign, the search for a new brand ambassador for Hudson, I got the email forwarded to me by my friend Matt Browner Hamlin, I think, who runs ajiggerofblog.com, mm-hmm. Boozy blogger. He got the press release and he forwarded it to me, and about 5 minutes later I forwarded it to my sweetie with a note that just said, my next gig, you know. I just thought, wow, this is perfect. I've been a fan of Hudson Whiskey. I've, you know, gone up and toured the distillery, and I just love the community aspect, the family-run business. It's, you know, they're making the stuff grain to glass. It's fantastic spirit. And I thought, you know, if this could be me taking a leap into the industry by doing this, you know, it would be a dream come true, and it has.
Nice.
So they basically put us through a huge process, though. There were, I guess, a couple hundred applicants. They broke that down to 12 and then to 3 finalists, and myself and a woman named Sarah and a guy named Michael, the 3 of us went and did a distillery residency, essentially. We spent 3 weeks up there and learning everything there is to know about Hudson and actually learning how to make it. From mashing to fermenting to distilling, bottling, dumping the barrels, tasting and blending, and the whole 9 yards. And, you know, it was just such a fascinating process. And it was the kind of thing that I probably would have paid for at a different time in my life, you know. But in the end, there was a promise of a job for the final pick. And in the end, I'm very grateful to have made the cut.
Yeah, absolutely. And congratulations to you. I mean, something that strikes my interest here with this whole situation is that, and speaking before, we were talking about how, before the show, we were talking about how you hadn't been a bartender before, ever.
Yeah.
But an enthusiast.
Yeah.
And to me, that's really interesting because, you know, as a bartender, when I'm on the other side of the bar, mm-hmm. I'm super enthusiastic. But I always want to have that. Like, there's the whole ideal of being at a bar and it being a kind of a communal experience and mm-hmm. a very like social experience. When you go to a bar, or when like even before you became the brand ambassador mm-hmm. for Hudson, did you sit at the bar with like friends or even with strangers and like just like talk about it like passionately?
Yeah.
I mean, I can envision that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for sure. One of the incredible fringe benefits, you know, I'm now, you know, making a living doing something I was spending all of my living on.
Well, clearly you're meant to do it.
Yeah. And, yeah. And you know,
they found you.
I had been an enthusiast and just someone who, like probably a lot of listeners to this show, just geeked out on the industry, on spirits, followed certain personalities on Twitter and watched Small Screen Network and videos about making cocktails and bought the latest books because I just was so enamored with, you know, bars and that communal gathering in bars that we adore, but also, you know, the alchemical process of making fine spirits and the whole kind of craft distilling renaissance that we're seeing bloom across the country. It was yeah. all stuff that I just was fascinated by and continue to be fascinated by, and I'm learning more than ever now yeah. that I'm actually in this role. But, you know, I worked a handful of shifts here and there behind bars at, you know, but beers and shots. I've never been a craft cocktail bartender. I did it for fun, and I did it to help out, you know, friends that I knew who own places. And, you know, I did it 20 years ago and then again 10 years ago and then again a few years ago for 3 months. You know, I mean, so I've technically worked behind bars, but for all intents and purposes, I've been a civilian until a couple months ago.
Well, yeah, you actually, like, I heard through the grapevine that you were, and maybe still are, a political and environmental activist. And how does that flow into, I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
Because it's small grassroots, you know, spot up in Gardner, New York, you know, sure. where they source everything from right there,
yeah.
you know, to me. Is that part of the draw to it?
Sure, sure. For me, the ethos, the way that Hudson Whiskey's made and the care, the community aspect of how this stuff is crafted with local grain and just the kind of focus on sustainability, all of that is super important to me, and it's one of the reasons that I just adore this whiskey. But you know, I mean, I am still involved in you know, human rights and environmental campaigning. I serve on some boards, and I work with activists, and I always will on issues that I care about. But I'd been doing it for 20 years, and I was just getting a little burnt out. And on a lot of levels, this had been my avocation, you know, mm-hmm. spirits and cocktails. It was the thing that I did as a hobby because it was fun, and it helped me blow off steam after being lucky enough to make a living doing, you know, important work on environmental and human rights issues. But at the point that I had the opportunity to sort of switch my vocation and avocation, at least for a little while, I could not pass that up.
Yeah. We could do a whole series of shows on just like the connection of small batch distilleries and community and the benefits of that and
yeah.
the actual effect of that.
You know, absolutely.
I think there's so much happening right now with the community of, well, first of all, just bartenders in general,
yeah,
bars in general,
yeah,
restaurants in general, like all of the above, you know, like yeah. And then we get into, like, you know, helping out, basically everyone's helping out each other. Like, you've got like all the farmers and the distillers,
yeah,
and the breweries, you know,
yeah.
and restaurants, like, we're all helping each other out
without a doubt,
trying to deliver the greatest product we possibly can.
Yeah. And that's one of the other things. I mean, Ralph Fiorenzo, I mentioned before, who co-founded Tuttletown Distillery and the, you know, started distilling Hudson Whiskey. You know, he's been very much at the forefront of this craft distilling renaissance that we see blooming all across the country. And here in New York State, Hudson Whiskey, of course, is the very first whiskey distilled in New York State since Prohibition. In fact, the very first bourbon ever made in New York State. And, you know, it was very, very difficult to get started. There were regulations and extremely high cost for licensing a new distillery. And Ralph, in his infinite wisdom, has not only, you know, been making this great spirit that we will enjoy in just a moment, but also lobbying in Albany and now in Washington, D.C. to change some of the laws around regulations and licensing for craft distillers. And so now there's something like 40 some odd new distilleries just in New York State. And that's great for local farmers. It's great for the economy. And you know, there's a sort of a recognition that a rising tide floats all boats. I don't think that's always true, by the way, but in terms of this industry, you know, Tuttletown, Ralph and the folks, with Hudson Whiskey are applauding and cheering for new distillers who are starting up, not seeing them as competition, but seeing them as new, you know, colleagues and allies
called synergy.
And it's just fantastic.
It's a great thing.
Absolutely.
You know what? Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking about Hudson Whiskey with Han Shan. Back in just a moment.
Michter's Distillery is a proud sponsor of In the Drink and HeritageRadioNetwork.org. At Michter's, our passion is making the finest whiskeys possible. When you only make small batch and single barrel whiskeys like Michter's does, your whiskey has to be perfect. No detail is too small, from careful attention to the wood used in the construction of our barrels, to lower barrel entry proof before heat cycled aging in advance of exacting chill filtration. And no whiskey gets bottled until Michter's master distiller says it's just right. Michter's cost be damned, taste is everything attitude is apparent in every sip of its smooth, rich whiskeys. Is it worth it? A lot of spirits lovers seem to think so. Food & Wine magazine called Michter's the best American whiskey. Bon Appetit said, it's amazing. And the Wall Street Journal had one special word for Michter's, phenomenal. For more information, visit Michter's.com or simply visit your favorite bartender or retailer and ask for Michter's.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network, the best radio station in the world.
Yeah, for the record, I like Michter's whiskey. You know, it's a fine product.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, but we're not here to talk about Michter's.
No.
We will be in the future. So, okay, it's been awesome talking to you so far. I think, you know, I think that the Hudson Whiskeys they kind of ushered in a lot of the small batch, like really grassroots style of whiskeys that we see today.
Yeah.
You know, small, like 375 milliliter apothecary bottles. I worked at a whiskey shop, Linnell's, back in the day.
Oh, yeah,
we were the
yeah.
first ones to carry
the
it.
The very first four bottles that Ralph drove down.
He drove them down.
To Red Hook, walked into Linnell's, and she said, hey, this is good stuff. We'll take whatever you got.
Absolutely.
And drive back up
and
put the rest of the stuff in the barrels.
Yeah, I've always loved it since then, you know. I have a bottle. What I used to do, well, I still do occasionally, but all my friends that started having babies, what I would do when the baby bourbon came out, the Hudson whiskey baby bourbon, I would always have a bottle of baby bourbon I would ship to my friends, you know, in other cities when they were having kids.
That's perfect.
And actually the first, my friends, Stephen and Susan in Oklahoma City, Ralph signed a bottle to them.
Nice.
And, it was great. Since then the line has grown, you know, there was the old gristmill, kind of like moonshine, like White Dog style. Mm-hmm. Now it's the New York
New York corn.
New York corn.
And that's just that's basically our White Dog. That's the the pure New York corn. It's all from within. Oh, sorry about that. it's all from Tantillo's farm. You know, literally right up the road from the distillery, and it's some Wapsie Valley sort of heirloom corn and some Hudson Valley field corn. But that's basically the baby bourbon before it goes into the barrel and ages and gets all that nice, you know, vanilla and caramel and oak that gives the baby bourbon its distinctive flavor. But the New York corn, it's still fantastic for White Dog.
Yeah.
So smooth, marzipan, just candy corn deliciousness.
I think I got a couple of recipes on your website that actually use that. There is the government warning label rye.
So now it's, things have changed. See, you were around
way back.
Very, very, very early watching, you know, the first attempts at putting the stuff in a bottle and slapping a label on it. But so now, you know, we call it Manhattan Rye. And it's, you know, I have a lot of friends who think the rye is their just absolute favorite. It's great. And it's called Manhattan Rye, of course, as an homage to the borough, because Ralph lived there for a bunch of years and opened climbing gyms before he became a whiskey man, moved upstate back to the Hudson Valley where he's from. But it's also very much, you know, it's a double entendre. It's very, very much intended
very
to remind people that it's fantastic in a Manhattan cocktail. Manhattan should be made with rye. You know, a bourbon, nothing wrong with a bourbon in Manhattan. My mom likes them. But the spiciness of the Manhattan rye, just it holds up really, really nice with the complex vermouth. And
well, I mean, I've always very much. I remember one time at the Manhattan Cocktail Classic. It was, 2010. It was like one of the first ones where we were in the Angostura bitters drought.
Nice, yeah.
And and Nick Jarrett was working the
touch and go.
Yeah, Nick Jarrett was working at the. Hudson Whiskey kind of kiosk bar, you know, and he had a giant, like, 16-ounce bottle of Angostura, and he just popped the top off and made everyone take shots of it. And it kind of like a fuck you to the drought. But then we enjoyed some Hudson Manhattans.
Yeah, nice.
What are we drinking right now?
Yeah, we're drinking the Four Grain. This is
my favorite.
Hudson Whiskey Four Grain Bourbon, and... you know, we're listening to the Michter's sponsor message earlier, and I, you know, certainly there's lots of nice things to say about Michter's, but the New York Times recently called this their favorite new American bourbon, new craft American bourbon. This is a four grain, but it's still a bourbon, of course. So it's 60% corn, but then it's also got rye and wheat and malted barley. So it's just a very complex, smooth sipper. And, you know, you get a little spiciness from the rye and the mid-palate, a little cracked pepper thing going on. But then the wheat kind of smooths it out, gives it a nice lingering finish. And it's just, it's my favorite new smooth sipper. But, you know, I get to drink a lot of this stuff, so I toggle back and forth.
Jealous.
Month to month, you know, between favorites. But it's my favorite lately, for sure.
I mean, this one has been one of my favorites out of the line. Actually, it's been my absolute favorite as long as the line's been out. I just love a four-grain whiskey. It just reminds me of home. It reminds me of being on the farm.
Yeah.
And, like, you know...
Why limit yourself?
Yeah, exactly. throw all four of those screens in there, man. But I mean, what's cool about this is, like, I mean, your bourbon is 100% corn, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, we've actually, you know, we've started adding just a little bit of malted barley.
You kind of have to, just to.
Well, yeah. I mean, originally it was 100% corn, and you know, almost every distiller will use a little bit of malted barley in their mix, in their mash bill, because there's some enzymes there that kind of
jumpstarts the fermentation
process in a lovely alchemical way. It's not alchemical, actually. We know exactly what's happening, but but it's, you know, so it's 90% corn. It's still a very, very you know, it's all corn except for a little malted barley. And the truth of the matter is the malted barley adds just a hint of spice, the same way that a lot of bourbon makers will add a little bit of rye for that flavor. There's a hint of sort of Christmas spice, and it's just lovely. But it's 90% corn. And then, of course, you know, we have a single malt. That's the last one. And it's a very, very different single malt than, you know, when people think of single malt, they think of Scotch. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it ain't Scotch. It's made in New York. But more than that, even though it's 100% malted barley in there, it goes into new charred American oak barrels, just like we put our bourbon and our rye in. And when it ages in those new charred American oak barrels, you're going to get those typical American whiskey flavors, those caramel, toffee, vanilla, oak, that really kind of robust barrel flavor that you know you think of in bourbon, but then it's made of single malt, so it's delicious and distinctive.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Like as American distilleries go, whiskey distilleries go. Mm-hmm. I mean, it all came from Scotland and Ireland.
Oh,
so
yeah.
it's almost like paying homage, but giving it an American twist.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's a great whiskey. I love that single malt whiskey. You guys are doing like so many cool things. I mean, there's not enough time in this show to even talk about all of it. One of my favorite things, I've been to the distillery a few times. One of the things I find very cool, like in a very like new school way of making spirits, is that in your aging room, your like Rick House, mm-hmm. which also doubles as your gift shop and tasting room, there's something really cool that happens in there. I mean, they're all small barrels to like kind of like promote like kind of a quicker aging experience.
Yeah.
But then there's also...
Well, you're talking about how all of our whiskey grew up on dubstep.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly.
Yeah, so...
We should get Jack to make a yes, playlist.
Put a playlist together for our whiskeys. Well, so basically, yeah, one of the co-founder along with Ralph, Brian Miller, is not Brian Miller. Why did I just
no? Say that? Brian Lee. That's Brian Miller, the tiki guy.
I know Brian Lee. He is a sound engineer and. He started rigging up big speakers to basically play very loud, bassy music to our barrels while they're aging, which basically it's just you're agitating the barrels and mm-hmm. you're increasing the contact between the spirit and the wood and kind of forcing that interaction in a way that ages the whiskey a little faster. And we called it sonic maturation or sonic agitation. And the truth of the matter is...
New band name, Jack.
Yes. we haven't been doing it lately. We're going to be doing it again. But basically, there was a fire in a couple years ago. And so we've been... Very, very hardcore. Nothing. No one got hurt. A few barrels got charred, which is
a good thing.
Yeah, we're looking forward to tasting that stuff soon enough. Our double charred whiskey, but
limited edition.
Yeah, it will be. But in the meantime, you know, we've battened down the hatches and been very, very hardcore about safety and so until we figure out how to do, you know, sparkless electrical systems and speakers. We turned off the tunes, but it'll be happening again. I mean, there's a lot of innovation that's happening throughout, you know, kind of craft distilling. But one of the things, of course, with aging whiskey, there's no replacement for just letting it sit in the barrel and age. That being said, yeah, we make the baby bourbon, for instance. It's not called baby bourbon because of the baby bottle, but rather the baby barrels. Like,
yeah.
We're aging some of it in tiny little barrels, 5, 10, 15-gallon barrels. And, you know, it ages a lot faster. That just ratio spirit to wood, ultimately, it's going to age a lot quicker. That being said, there's a difference between aging and maturation. So there's some things that you can't speed up. And so nowadays that we've been making whiskey a lot longer, we've got big barrels, we've got 53, 54 gallon kind of standard mm-hmm. whiskey size barrels that you think of. that have been aging in the Rick House for a few years, and we now mix. We actually are blending some of our tiny barrels that have that really aggressive vanilla, caramel, oak, boom kind of flavor with some of the more mature, longer aging in the big barrels whiskey, and you know, we blend it for the flavor profile we're looking for. So it's still, you know, it's younger whiskey. It's not age statement whiskey. You're not talking about 10 years. You're talking about all under 4 year whiskey, but you know, we don't age it to an age statement. We age it to the flavor that we're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between doing it right and doing it right now, but it sounds like to me you're doing it right now.
Yeah. I'm gonna borrow that. Steal that.
Copyright.
Yeah.
Oh,
damn it.
No, you can take that one. Well, man, I know there's so much more to talk about. I mean, like, yeah, there's, you know, also in the Rick House, there's pumping up the hot water from the still that does the spiraling thing, the heat, heat the room. Like, there's so many things to talk about that distillery. I encourage anyone who's close by the New York area or even visiting to go up to Gardner, New York and
Gardner,
check it out.
It's right near New Paltz. It's, you know, 90 minutes from where
so
we're sitting
close,
right now.
So close.
And it's beautiful Hudson River Valley, the gateway to the Gunks, the Shawangunk Ridge, and the mountains there that are, you know, a destination for climbers from around the world, which is why Ralph even went up there in the first place. He's a climber. And
he used to let hippies like just camp out.
Yeah,
climb.
Well, that I think that was the original intention. Which the neighbors balked at, and he had to start a world class distillery instead. So hey, you know, the neighbors were on to something, I guess. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the summertime, it's open 7 days, and there's a new restaurant. Well, it's been around for a while. Tuttle House at the Mill, the restaurant that's right there next to the distillery. Tuttletown just took it over again. They had sold it basically to raise money to pour into the distillery, and they bought it back from the folks who were running it for the last bunch of years. And now, great Hudson whiskey cocktails on the menu, as well as some of the other Tuttletown spirits. And you know, it's an awesome day trip. But yeah, 7 days during the summertime and in the wintertime. You know, every weekend we do tours. And
are you guys doing the harvest soon?
Yeah, I mean, October up there, late September, October, it's so beautiful. I mean, you know, the Tuttletown, they make their gin and one of their vodkas with fresh apples from, again, right up the road, Tantillo's farm, some other farms right around the distillery. And so, you know, they'll be apple picking. And I mean, we're coming up to harvest season. It's another just gorgeous time to be up in the Hudson River Valley.
Awesome.
Any excuse, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I need no excuses to go up there.
All right. Well, come
it's
on up.
Awesome.
Yeah,
yeah, man. I can't wait.
Sure.
Can't wait to make it back up there. Where can we find you?
Well, HudsonWhiskey.com. You want to get a hold of me, Han, H-A-N, at HudsonWhiskey.com. Drop me a line. Let me know if you're going to go up to the distillery. Let me set something up for you. And, yeah, you know, I hope... as I travel the country on behalf of Hudson Whiskey, I get to say hi to some of the folks listening, and I love some of the folks who've been on your show before. I'm awesome. A big fan of, so thank you for having me. I really
absolutely
do appreciate it.
My pleasure. I just emailed you, actually, while we're talking about this.
Amazing.
Me and Jack, we're coming up. All right. Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Thank you so much, Han.
Thanks for having
it's
me.
It's been a grand pleasure just having you in the studio and having... There's a lot, for our listeners, just to tell you, there's a lot more whiskey in here than we just sampled. I'm sure the good folks out here at Roberta's are going to really enjoy trying some of it. Well, I can't thank you enough, and it's been a great pleasure having you here on the Speakeasy on heritageradionetwork.org. Please check out this show and others just like it, except probably not as good as mine. Thanks, Jack. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.